Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Ohio State football program is undergoing an NCAA investigation, the result of a handful of football players' decision not to comply with NCAA rules, and also for the then-coach Jim Tressel's decision not to share his knowledge of those violations. Now what's in question is a system that monitors this athletic compliance or non-compliance. Last Thursday, an OSU trustee and Audit and Compliance Committee Chair Robert Schottenstein addressed the issue of the future of Ohio State's Athletic Compliance Department.
We feel very good about the processes we have, but we also know that we can always get better, and we want to use what's transpired as an opportunity to take a hard look, compare what we do with other institutions, both within the academic area and also the private sector, to make certain that we have very robust and appropriate compliance processes.
Joining us now to discuss how the future of athletic compliance impacts big-time college athletics is Charles Kottfelter. He is the Z. Smith Reynolds Professor of Public Policy Studies and Professor of Economics and Law at Duke University, where he has taught since 1979. He is also Director of the Center for the Study of Philanthropy and Volunteerism at Duke. Charles Kottfelter's new book, Big Time Sports in American Universities, examines the economic role of sports programs. He's been a guest on the program before, and we welcome you back, Charles.
Thanks for having me.
As we just heard in the statement by Robert Schottenstein, the OSU Board of Trustees is considering creating a centralized compliance department outside of athletics to ensure maximum objectivity. Do you think Ohio State sports is so big and brings in so much money, and other schools like it for that matter, that the old way of doing things needs to be changed in recognition of that?
It's very important for them to be concerned about this because the downside risks are obviously so great. But creating a separate office isn't obviously better than the way they've done it before. Administratively, it could be done in several ways. The key would be to filter down to all levels the recognition that violations are potentially very costly for the university.
Columbus Dispatch sports commentator Bob Hunter asked if a school like OSU is willing to finance 1,100 athletes in 35 sports, why shouldn't it have the biggest and best compliance office to go with it? So,
I think that big doesn't necessarily equate to best.
Okay.
The compliance people I've talked to have given me this idea that you could have a pretty small compliance office. That would mean in terms of number of people whose job description is rules, and still have a very effective process, because it really depends on how much the word and the belief gets down to the coaches and to the students themselves. So that big doesn't necessarily mean better, though it is certainly a big organization at Ohio State, and probably it's going to tend to be bigger than Toledo.
And if it were across the entire university, maybe a little more independent of the athletic department and not so much of the wink-wink atmosphere?
Right. The wink-wink atmosphere needs to be eliminated however you do it. Proposals have been made to combine, for example, the compliance in the medical center with athletics. And to me, this sounds a little bit crazy in that the problems are so different that I can't see any great advantage administratively in putting them in the same office. But at the same time, what one would want to have happen is for the knowledge in the athletic department to be widespread, that violations are a serious issue, and maybe having oversight from a chancellor, a president, or a provost wouldn't be a bad idea. So administratively, one might say, let's keep it the way it is, but add a vice provost to oversee this, something on that order.
What about the NCAA itself? We've several times have been trying to get the NCAA, a representative of the NCAA, on the show. They're not easy to get a hold of, and it makes you wonder, are they out of touch with the reality of big-time college sports? Are they out of control? Have they lost control?
It's we talk in the university about often departmental chairmen have the job of herding cats. It's not exactly that way here, but it does have the nature of holding a tiger by the tail, because the incentives for coaches to go up to the edge and maybe go over the edge are so great that there's 65 different ways that a certain rule can be violated. And so any administrative unit is going to have its hands full to try to deal with all of those eventualities. So that might be one reason the NCAA people are not falling all over themselves to come get interviewed by you. And the other reason is that if the NCAA is stuck with having to defend a system that really at some level doesn't seem quite right. And we have the prospect of these coaches making millions of dollars, and the workhorses of the operation, the students, are making, they're getting their scholarships, and they are penalized tremendously for selling a ring for a few hundred or $1,000. But the coaches are, walking away to the bank with millions of dollars. So there's something there that just smacks of inconsistency, if not hypocrisy.
My guest is Charles Klotfelter. He is a professor of public policy studies and a professor of economics and law at Duke University. He's the author of a new book, Big Time Sports in American Universities. We have a few minutes if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's one thing to have the students, the student athletes, out of compliance. There was almost immediately Gene Smith at OSU, the director of athletics, he said, well, they probably didn't know. We must not have done a good enough job of telling them. How, in your opinion, complicated are the rules at this point?
They have been compared to the Internal Revenue Code.
Oh, geez.
they're not, if they're put into printed form, my sense is that it would be a very large book, but it's actually more books than that, because there's one set of rules for the football bowl subdivision, another one for Division II, another for Division III. So many of these things are put on the web. So I think it is fair to say you always run the risk of having two groups of people doing something that's not in the rules. One is students. They could either be the athletes or they could be the tutors. It's possible that somebody could be do something that's against the rules. What an institution has to do in that case immediately is to say, this is what we found, report it, and be open about it. The other set of the other group that has historically always been a problem has been alumni. And alumni are out there. They've got money in their pocket. They love their team, and they want to do what will help the team. Often in the past, it has amounted to doing things that are in violation of the rules. They may or may not have known that. Again, the duty of the university is to, when that's found out, to report it and make it clear to all your beloved boosters, we don't want to do this. Because the reality is that a university like Ohio State, University of Southern California, University of Tennessee, University of North Carolina, they all can sustain great damage if there are violations.
Is one of the problems that the sports fans and the public are more interested in winning teams and don't care as much about compliance? When you read comments by fans in the newspapers, on blogs, everywhere you go, they're like, this is no big deal what they did. Why are they making such a big, hairy deal out of this? All they did was trade in what was their own property for some tattoos or money or whatever the gifts were. So there's the alumni, but then there's that backdrop of the millions of people out there who think it's just not that big of a deal. Is the NCAA rules out of touch with what the reality is and what people really expect in terms of ethics?
One of the things that I discovered in writing my book was that universities are different things to different people. And we professors in the university think it should be a tower of learning and teaching. But out in the world, universities like Duke and Ohio State are known as much or more for their athletic programs than they are for their academics. And so the reality is that there is a large and sometimes powerful constituency that might not be all that interested in dotting every I. But the university ultimately, and that's the reason it's great that a trustee at Ohio State is speaking up, ultimately it's the university that has to decide what kind of institution it's going to be. And if it condones or winks at any kind of noncompliance, no matter what it is, it's going to lose something of value.
Speaking of value, it doesn't seem like the players, at least the ones that traded in their golden pants and thing, you know, other stuff, they don't really value that stuff. Why not just not give it to them until they graduate or leave the program? What about rules like that? Why do they get that kind of stuff?
That's higher powers are eligible for answering that question.
$56,000 question.
So I don't know the answer. But when and you're not talking about paying the players, but in those discussions, I think probably down the road, there might be ways to figure out ways to compensate these star athletes in a way that doesn't compromise their amateur status while they're playing.
And also doesn't conflict with Title IX.
Correct. I mean, you certainly want to worry about all those requirements as well.
Well, I want to thank you, Charles Kopfeder, for joining us again today to talk about this.
Been my pleasure.
It's Charles Kopfeder. He is author and public policy professor at Duke University. His book is, Big Time Sports in American Universities, about the economic role of sports programs. Now we go to a special coverage of President Obama's White House press conference. This is 89.7 NPR News.